Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders. For The Athletic, I am decidedly outside of the DMV right now. I'm talking to you from just outside Minneapolis, about, 8 or 10 minutes from the Vikings practice facility, as the NFL owners meeting will take place Monday and Tuesday right by the Vikings practice facility. So I'm here for that. Obviously, here to hear what the league might have to say about the Dan Snyder situation, selling the team, where are we at with updates. That's what we'll be discussing here. So that is why I am here. We've got a few other things to discuss, though. Here's what I've got for you on the podcast. On Saturday, the Commanders held a flag football clinic for kids at the facility. Eric Bieniemy was there, and he was given to us for a few minutes to chat. Just to catch up, we have not really talked to him for some time. So I'm going to play some of that press conference, so to speak, there with basically myself and a couple other reporters. So we'll get to that in a moment and let you hear what he had to say. In addition, Virginia State Senator Chap Peterson joined me on Friday to get his view of where things stand right now overall with the Commanders stadium situation and where he thinks Virginia is positioned among the other jurisdictions. So we'll get to all that in a moment here on the Standing Room Only podcast, which of course you can find on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. I'll have a story up on Monday, speaking of Eric Bieniemy, on The Athletic, about Bieniemy and some thoughts on him coming in to help, try to turn this offense around. So you can do that. Now, before I get to a couple notes here, if you're a Twitter person, be warned that the at Ben Standing account is unfortunately right now not under my control. I got hacked over the weekend. Not great. Not great. But we're hopeful. Fingers crossed we'll get things straightened out there. In the interim, I've had this second account all this time when I used to run this account for Breaking Burgundy for Scout.com 100 years ago. I've kept it. It was at Break Burgundy, but I've switched it for now to at Ben Standing, T-E-M-P, as in temporary. So I'll be tweeting from there for the moment, and hopefully just a moment, but just a heads up on that front. If the at Ben Standing starts tweeting randomness, just it's not me. I'll tell you when it's back. We're back to my randomness. All right, so a couple of things here. So as I mentioned, we're in Minnesota. They will not be having a vote this week. The league confirmed that on Friday during a press conference, but this was a pretty known deal. I mean, even when Josh Harris and Dan Snyder put out a statement about their agreement to sell the team, you know, Josh Harris's comment said, we hope to wrap this up over the next couple of months. I had a league source say something similar, sort of that vague timeline, but one that's shooting out towards the distance. So the idea that this would be, they'd be having a meeting within like a week or so, never made any sense. But nonetheless, it is not going to happen here in Minnesota. What will happen here, though, is that Roger Goodell will hold a press conference at some point, and the owners will be around and about, and we'll see if any of them are willing to talk and what they have to say about the whole situation. So, you know, obviously we've been this whole for weeks and weeks now, we've been going, when is this going to get done? When is this going to get done? You know, I've been trying to offer no opinion, frankly, throughout this time, because it's been hard to know. And even though the Josh Harris, you know, side had reached an agreement with the Dan Snyder side, you know, over a month ago at this point, you know, it is still clearly not resolved. And I think that's a combination of sorting out the debt limit on the Josh Harris side and maybe some details on the Snyder side. So again, we'll see what we can find out here. Hopefully we'll get some good information or get some owners talking on the record about what they think. Until then, we wait. The Commanders will be back on the field this week. The media will be out there on Wednesday. I should be back in town for that. So you can get ready for that. And we'll be tweeting out updates. At least I will be from my backup account. tweeting out updates about what's going on and how they look. But that will wait till Wednesday for that. So Monday, Tuesday here in Minnesota. Wednesday back in Ashburn. All right, some other news this week. Joint practices. It's going to happen. First time under Ron Rivera, the Commanders will hold joint practices. It'll be in Baltimore, technically Owens Mills, against the Ravens ahead of the second preseason game where the Ravens will come to FedEx Field. So there'll be 2 days. And look, I think the joint practices, I think we all kind of agree, this is a good deal. Rivera had said earlier in the offseason that he would like to get this done. I think there was some, you know, there was some sense it could have happened even last year, maybe with the Buffalo Bills before the J.D. McKissic situation went down. Nonetheless, they're going to do that this year, so I think that's going to be an exciting deal. And, you know, we know how the preseason games can go. They may not use, you know, a lot of the starters much at all. you know, maybe some in the first game, more in the second game, and then none in the third game. But having the joint practices does, you know, to a degree, make up for that at least a little bit. So good news there, I believe, for all involved. But so we'll deal with that later on in this summer. Just a quick note on Andrew Norwell. I have talked about this before, that we're just waiting basically for him to get released. And you might be asking, well, why hasn't it happened? Why did Chase Rea already get released but not Norwell? I believe my understanding is that Norwell has been dealing with an injury that he was sort of played through with at the end of the year, and then need that to get cleared medically before they could release him. So, I think that will happen. I don't see any reason that it won't, but I'm just giving you that little sort of heads up there as to why it's taking this long. But again, two times now Rivera has discussed the left guard competition, and neither time did he mention Norwell directly. So we are just waiting essentially for the release, but that's why it has not happened quite yet. All right, enough out of me. Let's get to Eric Bieniemy here. As I said, he spoke to a few of us out at Ashburn right as this kids clinic was starting. You'll hear myself, Nikki Jabala from the Washington Post, and John Keim from ESPN asking Bieniemy different questions. I would just say this. I'm just going to be honest. You're not going to hear some deep dive from Bieniemy about what his plans are for this year for the offense, for Sam Howell, or for anything like that. But I think what is interesting, I think, for fans will be listening to his tone, listening to him speak, listen to the confidence. I think that will be, you know, that's going to be something that's going to be on display this year and talking to the players as well. And, you know, with Bieniemy, they're getting a guy that people hope can be a legitimate offensive coordinator upgrade for Washington, but also I think there's an attitude there as well in a positive way to give these guys, you know, a different vibe than what they had, more confidence, more urgency. I think that is also something that should benefit them if that's what they ultimately get. And I think I'll be curious to see or to hear what you think about Bieniemy's tone here. So let's get to this though. We'll start off with Eric Bieniemy this week, and then my conversation with Virginia State Senator Chat Peterson on the stadium hunt here on the Standard Room Only podcast.
We've been going through our OTAs, our phase two portion of it. Been doing some installs and obviously getting some work out on the field. The guys have done a heck of a job. I think they're doing a great job of learning, but on top of that, they're doing a heck of a job of going out there and executing what I expect them to do. It's been fun. There's a good group of men. On top of that, they've been working their tails off, so I'm excited about the next phase.
You kind of mentioned this in your presser about the difference in not just practicing, you know, as a system you're familiar with, but you come here and now you're installing it and teaching it to coaches and players. Mm-hmm. Just how much different is that for you, just kind of starting over in that regard?
You know what? It's it's different, and I say this, and hopefully this doesn't get taken the wrong way. Because when you've been in this, a place for 10 years, you have a tendency to take certain things for granted. And so what this has done, it's helped me to go back and dot all the I's and cross all the T's and making sure that I'm giving the proper instruction and not just taking anything for granted because I knew such and such coach would be able to explain this or be able to take the time to go over this detail in this particular meeting. So my goal is to make sure that I'm giving all the instruction and making sure these guys are tooled and ready. All right, so if any question come up, now they can have that answer. All right? So the biggest thing is just making sure that everybody has a complete understanding. And if they don't have an understanding, it's my job to make sure that I give them the answer.
Has it energized you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, I'm fired up and excited. I'm always fired up and excited. But it's given me a whole new outlook, just observing and then studying, you know, not just what studying our plays and what we do, but how our guys are going to fit in the system. And I think that's important.
One of the questions, of course, is just like, what is an Eric Bieniemy system? Does going through this process help you, even for you, define exactly what it's going to be here?
Well, there is a system, but the thing is, I want to make sure the system can work with the players that we have. And so, at the end of the day, it's not about, quote-unquote, the system. It's about what the players can do and how well they can do it and helping us to get across that finish line. But when it's all said and done with, yes, we will throw it and we're going to run it, just like every other team. But when it's all said and done with, we're going to play great team ball and find a way to making sure that we're giving ourselves the best opportunity to be the best that we can be.
When you're installing something, what's maybe the biggest challenge, especially when you have a young quarterback like Sam, what's the biggest challenge when you're installing?
I don't think there's any challenge when you're installing. That's why you have other coaches as well. You have assistant coaches because now they can, what you did in detail, they can go into detail, making sure that they're covering all the little aspects of the things that may not have gotten covered or understood in that particular moment. But at the end of the day, the thing that I enjoy is just the instructional aspect of it, being a teacher again. Making sure that I'm giving all the proper details and giving these guys answers that they may need moving forward.
You talk about tailoring it to your players. How do you go about that? Like, how much is there, like, sort of trial and error in it?
There's a lot of trial and error because you don't know what you don't know until you go out there and see guys do it. And so at the end of the day, you want to give all these guys the opportunity to show what they can do. But then you just learn and study your peers. You learn to study the talent that you have, and you see how they improvise and adjust and how they adapt to all the nuances of what we expect them to do. So that's the fun part about this. So we're all growing together, but like I said, these guys have been, they've been into it. They've been working their tails off. They're excited. I mean, they sit quietly in the room. I mean, it's like being that kindergarten teacher teaching young kids again how to go about their business and handle their day. But these guys they've been doing good, and I'm excited about what we're doing moving forward.
What's your early impression of Sam Powell?
Sam's done a heck of a job. Sam's very professional. He's very critical of self. He's very self-aware. But on top of that, he's talented, okay? He wants to be the very best that he can be. And when it's all said and done with, he just wants to do whatever he can to help this team to grow in the right direction.
How about Jacoby?
Jacoby is the ultimate professional. He's been around this business for a long time. He's been a great addition in that room just from the experience that he's had. And on top of that, he can share that experience with the men in that room.
You guys added a few rookies, a few offensive pieces in the draft. What are your thoughts, initial thoughts on some of those guys?
You can't get enough offensive linemen. So anytime you have offensive linemen that you can add and develop, because if you don't develop them, it's going to cost you. So you might as well get some pieces that can come in there and contribute. Both those guys are doing a heck of a job. And I'm fired up and excited. And on top of that, we got the young runner. I think the young runner's done a heck of a job so far. Obviously, he's been here for a week. So these guys are finding their way, fitting in with the nucleus of the groups. And so our young coaches are doing a heck of a job of getting these guys going.
What did you like about Chris Rodriguez at commitment?
He plays hard. He runs hard. He's a player that has good hands. You know, he does a lot of things good. at the end of the day, when you're coaching that position, you want the best football players who happen to play the running back position. So he's one of those guys that brings a different element. Not so much that all the other guys are not different, but he can run it, he can catch it, but on top of that, he can protect the quarterback when asked to.
You got three pretty big backs. Was that was that intended to get to get size there?
Well, normally big bodies can move people, right? So you love when those big bodies can go out there and change the outlook on the game and make those guys make business decisions, you know, in the open field throughout the course of the game. And I'm talking about secondary defenders. But these guys, they're all a big, but yes, they all bring something different to the table. But I will say this, okay? They all have that temperament that they got to be the best football player. Just because Brian has displayed that he can run it physically, he's also a kid that can go out on the perimeter and make catches. He's also proven that he has great hands, and on top of that, he's willing to protect the quarterback, such as AG. So I'm excited about what everybody brings to the table. And these guys get it, they understand it, they're into it. And now it's time to just to keep implementing and moving forward to see what happens once we get to opening day.
We saw it.
All right, we've talked a lot about the stadium this week, so here to give us some inside on as somebody who's going to be dealing with this topic again, he already has and will again at some point, is Virginia State Senator Chap Peterson, who was front and center last year when this was a hot topic in Virginia. Chap, I appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me on, Ben.
So it's been, the world has changed a bit since myself and other reporters were reaching out to you and your colleagues because at that point, you know, it was like, hey, is Virginia going to be able to get this done? Do they want to get a deal done?
Right.
And then when things ended and a few months later, Dan Snyder puts the team up for sale. And now we're here where he's got an agreement in place to sell the team. If I had told you this last summer when this was all going on, would you believe that this is kind of where we'd be at in terms of the ownership?
Wow. You know what? I guess probably no. I mean, there have been so many rumors about Snyder selling the team, and to think that it's, you know, finally going to come to fruition, that's a significant change of circumstance.
No doubt. Now, you are not just a state senator, but you are a longtime fan of this team, correct?
Yeah, I was a season ticket holder for 23 years. You know, I was very involved with the team on a lot of different levels. I represented the native tribes that supported the name Redskins in the some of the litigation that revolved around it. And I was just generally someone that supported the team in the stadium and outside the stadium. And, you know, I was a Redskins fan as a little kid, and it was one of the great loves of my life next to my wife, Sharon.
Yeah, for sure. With regards to, let me ask you this. So, as a former season ticket holder, what does this mean to you that a new group is coming in?
Well, you know, it's not that it's going to immediately change me. I think I made a pretty hard break from the team in 2020 for a lot of reasons. Some which had to do with my own mental health, some which had to do with, you know, I was a Redskins fan and going to another team and a different name and a different tradition was, you know, I didn't feel the same pull. We'll see. I mean, I love football. Playing, coaching, watching football is, you know, something I really enjoy. So I'm kind of in a wait and see. I'm not going to immediately re-up season tickets. I think that was, you know, when the kids were younger and I'd take them all to the stadium and, you know, it's hard to recapture that moment. But I'm like a lot of sports fans. I think I'll probably watch and see how the things develop.
Fair enough. Well, you're going to obviously see how things develop here over the next few weeks or months with regards to ownership and what the Josh Harris group, whenever they're finally approved, how they weigh in on the stadium situation. You also, you know, there's only some, it's not much you can do about whatever D.C. or Maryland choose to do. So let's just focus on Virginia.
Right.
Virginia was easily, I thought, the most aggressive of the three jurisdictions last year. There was at one point even some talk of maybe like $1 billion in some sort of funding or incentives or what have you. The number got whittled down over time and then ultimately was, you know, put on hold, you know, and that's kind of where things are at now. Where for you is this, is the Virginia's view of the stadium at right now?
Well, I think, you know, we started off interested in the team in 2022, and there was legislation which came through Senate Finance that was had a financing scheme whereby new taxes that would have been generated by the team and by the stadium, a portion of that would have been put back into retiring the bonds on the stadium. And you know, it was not atypical to what we had talked about with pro baseball. It was not atypical to what other localities had done. And we ended up taking a hard pass on it, and I think there were a couple reasons. One was, I think, just the uncertainty and the toxic nature of the team, and just everything, the fan base, the controversies, the lack of fan interest, to be quite blunt, with the team, that we just it wasn't the most attractive entity. And then secondly, I think there was a lot of pushback, and I heard this, and you know, I've heard it. I'm up for re-election this year, so I'm hearing it right now. People didn't want to see their taxpayer money spent on a private sports team, which I totally understand, and I think there was a lot of pushback on that. And so I think those were the two issues. Now, the first issue may be solved. I think, yes, a new ownership group is going to resolve a lot of the controversies. It still is not like the old Redskins under Jack Kent Cook, where you had a team that really unified a community. We're not there. But even though assuming we did, I still think the second issue is a very high mountain to cross, and that is this concept that we are going to take taxpayer money and build a privately funded stadium or assist in building a privately funded stadium. And I know that there's ways that you can count the money or you count new tax revenue and you sort of wrap it back inside the project. And, you know, arguably we did that to some extent with Amazon, although Amazon created a lot more jobs. But that's a very high hurdle, a very high hurdle.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You mentioned the election year. I can't imagine that this type of project is something that constituents are get too excited about, for sure. That said, if the Josh Harris group is sort of, you know, slow to this, like, hey, we've got to get our ducks in a row, we need to maybe do some studies or whatever they think they need to do to get this going, and then we're looking at 6 months from now, 9 months from now, right, maybe even a year from now, do you think that changes the dynamic at all in terms of a willingness to engage in that way?
You know what, believe it or not, a lot of this business is personal, and I remember telling Dan Snyder and his ownership group back in the day, back when I was still someone that they listened to, that he ought to go to the stadium on game day, stand at the front gate and shake every hand walking in, and just let people know that he cared about their opinions as fans, and he wanted to, you know, put the best team on the field to you know, fulfill their pride. This new group, I think if they want to do business with the Commonwealth of Virginia, I think they need to come into Virginia. They should be doing camps for kids, you know, maybe local high school teams, local youth football teams. They ought to go down to Richmond and meet with the General Assembly. And I don't mean like send their lobbyists down. I mean the new owners ought to come, you know, Magic Johnson, whomever. You know, the bottom line is we're not going to get bowled over by saying, hey, someone's saying, I got a pro sports team, you know, kiss the ring. That's not how it works anymore. And I think they need to come into the community and show that they're interested and they're going to willing to invest. And, you know, it's going to take a while because, like I said, it's we're a long way away from when the Redskins were winning Super Bowls and we had a million people in the streets of D.C. celebrating. That's 30-some years ago, 31 years ago. And I just feel like this group, more power to them, but they need to get out and meet people, and it's got to be personal.
Right, and I think I spoke to one of your colleagues in the General Assembly, David Reed, one of the delegates, and he was saying that, like, at least now with the new group, discussions of the project can be viewed from an economic viability standpoint, whereas last year, at least, it became more of a referendum on Dan Snyder almost specifically, and I think that's to your point, like, at least with a new group in there, whatever discussions are being had across the region can be viewed about the actual project versus, wow, we can't really do business when a group with an organization that's being investigated by Congress and has umpteen other issues going on.
I think that's fair.
Did you have a chance to see the ESPN story that came out earlier this week that had a look at a perspectives from Josh Harris and talked about potential investments from Virginia specifically upwards of maybe even $1.5 billion?
Yeah, well, I've been asked about that. I think the idea that they're going to get $1.5 billion from Virginia is crazy. I mean, that's a non-starter. I think the deal that we had proposed from Snyder was like $600 to $700 million in what would have been new revenue that would have been basically folded back into the stadium or retiring bonds. And that eventually got whittled down to, I think, $300 million. So $1.5 billion is just not going to happen.
Fair enough. With regards to the location, let's just say for argument's sake that the Commanders say, hey, we'd like all the jurisdictions to give us your best presentation, help us out here, just give us one spot to consider. Is there one spot for you in Virginia right now that makes the most sense to present in that way? And if so, which one, and what are some of the benefits of that spot?
Yeah, well, I would have said 30 years ago, Doug Wilder and Jack Kent Cooke, two of the great personalities of their generation, had a handshake deal to locate the new stadium at the Naval Yards, right in Alexandria, the old RF&P site. And that blew up, and it ended up becoming a discount shopping mall. That would have been perfect because it's right on the river and right on a metro line. I guess you could try and shoehorn in something to that Woodbridge site, although that Route 95 traffic will be problematic. To be brutally honest, the best place for the team to go is back to RFK. I think we all know that. That's the nerve center of our community. It's a beautiful stadium site. You can walk there from Capitol Hill. And as a fan, that to me, I would love to go to a football game in RFK one last time before I die.
As a person who was a season ticket holder, I totally get that emotion. I mean, I used to go to games at RFK myself. But was this, a year or so ago when there was – Virginia had seemingly some momentum behind this.
Yeah.
Did you have that same feeling then, or does it feel different now because maybe DC is more engaged?
You asked me, and again, I'm speaking as an individual, as a Redskins fan, as a sort of a traditional Washington area Washingtonian guy. Economically, look, my job is not to sort of fulfill my own nostalgia. My job is to make a good deal for my constituents. And, if someone came in and they're like, we'll put the team here, we'll redevelop an area, we'll create shopping malls, we'll create mixed use, we'll create housing, we'll create a community, here's the economic spinoff. Yeah, I think we'll take that seriously. And that's kind of what the team was trying to do last year. So, at the end of the day, we will look for economic viability. And if people want to do business in Virginia, they have an economic package that makes sense for us, then, of course, we're going to entertain it. This idea that we're just going to write a check for a stadium, though, it's not how it's going to work. I think the team needs to come to us and say, here's what we can offer.
Got it. It's going to be so fascinating to see. And I guess to sort of last on this note, with moving on from Dan Snyder, puts a lot more people, I think, in play for wanting to at least engage in this topic, and you've already seen DC and Maryland be more vocal about having interest than it seemed that they were before. If it is sort of that, three-way kind of race, how do you think Virginia squares up ultimately against those other areas?
I think Virginia has a couple benefits in that we're a more pro-business jurisdiction. you know, our right to work state. You know, we have probably, I'm sure we have lower tax rates than the District of Maryland. So that's all an advantage. I also think that, you know, at least to some extent, the fan base, at least, you know, years ago when I was going to games, the fan base was really spread more down towards Virginia and Richmond and Hampton Roads than it was up towards Maryland. So, you know, to the extent you locate in Virginia, you may be, you know, better within your fan base. I'm not sure if that's still the case. Yeah, so those are some of the advantages of Virginia. And, you know, we've got a population with disposable income. We got people that I'm sure can afford season tickets. So that's another advantage.
For sure. Hey, Chap, I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, good talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. State Senator Chap Peterson on the stadium search from the Virginia perspective.
All right. Many thanks to Chap Peterson for his time. Appreciate Eric Bieniemy being available for us on Saturday. And, of course, thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast and checking out The Athletic. We'll see what happens here in Minnesota. I will be keeping you up to date. And, you know, again, if you want to follow me on Twitter, at Ben Standig, T-E-M-P, that's where we're at for now. Hopefully not for long. But that's it for now. Ben Standig signing off. Until next time. See ya.